And now, let's join Maggie Linton on SiriusXM Urban View, Channel 110.
Well, welcome back. Tomorrow we'll talk race with and how it continues to hold so many people back with former homicide detective and author Rod Demery. But we continue right now with healthcare and aging expert Anthony Cirillo. He explains how to avoid many of the pitfalls that come with elder care with his book, Who Moved My Dentures? Anthony is also founder of Fast Forward Consulting, and he sings too. Welcome, Anthony.
Thanks, Maggie. Pleasure to be here.
I tell you, your book was delightful, but I want to begin with how you got into realizing that age is just a number and you should have fun right till the end.
Well, you know, it actually started, so my background is healthcare, and I was just a cubicle guy back in Philadelphia as a marketing director for a bunch of hospitals and doing my work there, but I was also a full-time musician and, you know, playing in resorts and nightclubs and kind of got burned out on that. And one day I walked into a nursing home and I started singing for our elders there. And, you know, first was just a way to make side money, I'll be honest with you. And then all of a sudden, you know, after about 100 performances a year, I realized that I was getting a heck of a lot of fulfillment out of it and was getting was giving a lot of fulfillment as well. And those folks just teach me so many, have taught me and continue to teach me so many lessons about living our life, because particularly in nursing homes, you know, the perception is, and pretty much still is today, that's the place you go to die. Well, I can point to a lot of people who have gone there and have lived a life, a quality life, in their last stages of life, and they just can teach us so much. So, you know, there are people who can thrive in these places. I'm not necessarily a pro-nursing or assisted living guy. I'm a baby boomer who wants to age in my home, too.
Yeah, that's the one thing people really do. You see so many of them really fighting to stay in their homes. And with that comes a certain amount of care that may be provided, but so often it's provided by the caregivers become the children or, you know, neighbors or something like that. And that within itself can be a little tough on them.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the thing about caregiving, and you know, my mom's, God bless her, she's 92. Next birthday she'll be 93, and you know, she's living with my sister. My sister is the caregiver, and you know, we sort of divided the you know, how it was going to work, and we talked about it early on. And that's probably a lesson for people in general, is that especially around the holiday times now, people may see, you know, visit people who they haven't seen, an elder who they haven't seen in a long time, and they may start noticing some signs. This is the perfect opportunity to start having those discussions about, you know, the what ifs and, you know, the scenarios that might play out. My sister and I had that talk with my mother early on, and it was kind of given that, you know, and I'm not going to stereotype, but the majority of caregivers, family caregivers, tend to be women. Mm-hmm. You know, my house wasn't particularly suited for my mom, with stairs. My sister lived in Florida, better climate, a first floor. And so, you know, frankly, we provided financial assistance when needed, and my sister has the real chore. She's the real hero. And, you know, her health has suffered, you know, in the process as well. So, you know, caregivers really need to pay attention to their own health and well-being, but they're truly ours.
Yeah, very true. Folks, if you'd like to join in the discussion, you're certainly welcome to. Once again, we're talking with Anthony Cirillo, and his book is Who Moved My Dentures? I love the title. But you can give us a call at 866-801-8255. Once again, 866-801-8255. You mentioned that you are helping with assistance, and so often that does not occur. You find, you know, the one person who has the parent, or sometimes parents, is really shouldering all the burden, and the rest of the kids act like they were orphans.
Yeah. that is true, and I could point to, you know, again, to family examples, but I can't name names over. I'll have problems for the whole holidays. But, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, I have a small family. It's just my sister and I. My sister's actually 10 years older than I am. Uh-huh. So, you know, we worked it out. You know, my wife's siblings, there's five of them, and, you know, we've had discussions around that as well. But you're absolutely right, and sometimes it's geography based, you know, or, you know, I joke with my wife, she's the middle child, and she is become the person who has seemed to coordinate a lot of the stuff for her parents. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it is something, again, I think that only, you know, that will happen. But I think if, again, people talk about these issues earlier, and that's kind of my platform. That's what I get on my pedestal about, you know, and try to tell people. You really need to prepare for aging issues sooner in life, mm-hmm. and not just for your elderly parents, but for yourself. And it's not, you know, it's your physical health, it's your financial health, and what I call emotional health. And really, that's pretty much what have I learned from elders about living a quality life when you grow older.
Mm-hmm. Should your parents need to go into a facility, though? A lot of there are facilities out here that do not meet a good standard, but so many more are getting knocked around and really have a positive way of treating their patients. Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't call them patients, but their residents.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I serve on a national board. It's a convoluted name, CCAL, Advancing Person-Centered Living. But the whole concept there is person-centered. You know, I work in the hospital healthcare industry a part of my time, and, you know, they talk about the patient experience, and nursing and assisted living talk about the resident experience. But it's really about the person who is, you know, under your care. And regardless of the location of where the care is, they're a person, and they need to be, you know, respected and dignified and, you know, have the choice that they deserve. And some places are better than others. You know, it's no secret that Frontline did a special on life and death and assisted living, you know, maybe 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And it was even shocking to me, because somebody works in the industry, when you see some of the things that kind of go on that are just appalling and they're inexcusable. And part of that's, you know, the culture of an organization and how they care for people. So, you know, there's certainly, I mean, you can have an, you know, hours discussion about how to look for these places and choose them, but there are so many ways, and there's so many online resources, and there's so much more transparency evolving that, you know, people can make an informed decision. You know, my mother had some hospitalization a few years back, and I had to put all my advice to use for myself, because she needed some rehab. And, you know, I started with some of the online resources, the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services site for Nursing Home Compare. And, you know, you get some clues about staffing and quality and things like that. But then, you know, you got to go deeper and, you know, tour these places and maybe even bring a nurse along. And you will pick up quite quickly the culture of an organization. I mean, I could tell you just, you know, one place we went into, we were waiting 15 minutes before somebody greeted us. They basically shoved some brochures in our face and we were gone. Next place, the people were, you know, greeting us, we were touring, and you could pick it up, some of the culture cues, just by walking around. And I said, well, this is the place for Mom. And unfortunately, we couldn't actually get her in there because it was full, which probably was also a testament to that, and then to them. And, you know, we eventually did get her in there, and she had great care, but thankfully, she's back home.
Yeah. I was going to say, a lot of times, if you can't get into a facility right when you want to, the other thing is to also get on a waiting list and, you know, pre-qualify for getting into there, which will help move things along so much more quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, you know, when you're talking about there's different levels of care. I'm sure your audience is familiar with some of them. But, you know, there's something called continuing care retirement communities, mm-hmm. Where, you know, you can go in living independently and then, you know, move to the other levels. But, you know, frankly, they're incredibly expensive. And unfortunately, there's kind of a society evolving, as we have in a lot of issues in our society, of haves and have-nots. And long-term care is something that, you know, is not, you know, the elephant in the room of Obamacare is long-term care financing, because there is no long-term care financing. I mean, people don't understand that, you know, essentially Medicare is only going to pay for your stay if it's hospital related, and if you're in the hospital for 3 days, they're trying to change that. But again, it will only be for a certain amount of time, and you will have to pay part of that. If you need more care and you don't have, you know, long-term care insurance, it's basically going to come out of your pocket. You know, there's no Social Security here or Medicare paying for this, except for certain situations. It's about, you know, spending down your income and maybe qualifying for Medicaid. And even that gets harder and harder today. And so people are just, it becomes a crisis because people had no clue. And so while getting on waiting lists and all that is a good thing for those who have means, it's wonderful, and if you want that kind of lifestyle, but it's make no mistake about it, people have to realize that beyond saving for your retirement, that whole retirement nest egg can go if you need some long-term care. And it, you know, really becomes part of our advocacy work in this country about getting these types of things funded, because in other countries with, you know, quote, socialized medicine, these are not issues. Long-term care funding is not an issue. People will get, you know, it's paid for.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we will continue our discussion about long-term care and how to keep everybody happy with Anthony Cirillo in just a moment. Stay tuned.
We'll be right back with more conversation about today's hottest topics right after this short break. This is the Maggie Linton Show on SiriusXM Urban View. And now, let's join Maggie Linton on SiriusXM Urban View, Channel 110.
Well, welcome back. We continue with healthcare and aging expert Anthony Cirillo. I love your little end of chapter ones called Perception and Reality. And his book is Who Moved My Dentures? I love the book. A lot of laughs throughout this book. But one of the things you talk about is many people perceive a long-term care facilities as a place to go to die. And you say the reality is it's a place to go to live.
Yes, absolutely. And this gets back to kind of some of the lessons I've learned from our elders. Now, granted, there are people, you know, I still go in and sing. You know, how I use my voice still is I go in and sing in nursing homes and assisted living. It's something that keeps me grateful and and grounded and just, you know, really, you know, purposely grounded in my life. And I see a lot of people in these places who have gotten there not because age caught up with them, but they didn't keep up with themselves. And so in my opinion, frankly, they have no business being there because they just didn't take care of themselves, you know, during their lives, particularly physically. Then there's other people who are in these places who basically through life circumstances really had no choice, you know, that they needed this type and level of care. And there's people who thrive, and there's people who, you know, are diminished when they go in. And the people who thrive, essentially, who are living the next chapter as opposed to going there to die, you know, have certain traits. And, you know, one of the first ones I talk about when I'm out speaking is they still have purpose. And there's a woman in my book called Ruth Ann, and she has since passed away, but God bless her. When I went to interview her, she had been in this nursing home, and she had taken on lots of different duties, delivering newspapers and serving coffee. And when her legs gave out and she was wheelchair bound, she became president of the Residents Council. And then when I interviewed her for my book, we went out and sat by this tree. I think it was actually named in her honor because it was sort of her office. And she said, you know, I pray to God every day what my purpose in life is. And I was like dumbfounded. I'm saying, wow, you know, there's so many of us every day who are still trying to figure it out, that this woman, you know, who I thought has all this great purpose in what she was doing, was still searching. But that was part of what was keeping her, you know, in a quality of life. I mean, there's seven or eight things from, you know, the social networks that we develop. You know, if you were somebody who had a social network when you were, living your life, you're going to be able to do that when you're in nursing or assisted living, and even sometimes some of these places become very cliquish, and you get, it's almost like being back in high school. You know,
yeah,
some of that stuff happens.
Yeah.
But you know, so there's certainly things that I observe that people are you know, using to live a quality life.
Well, the other thing, there's a wonderful chapter in here, That's What Friends Are For, talking about getting new friendships going. And the one between Carolyn Law and Betty Fletcher is really something very special. A lot of laughter in that one.
Oh, yeah, Absolutely. And again, you know, I think, I'm not sure if Betty or, I think one of them has passed on, but, you know, when I went to interview them, I heard the giggles down the hallway, you know, a mile away, you know, before I even got to the room to talk to them. And they were not, you know, they didn't know each other until they, you know, got to this assisted living. I think this was in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Right.
And, you know, they just hit it off. And I think Carolyn or Betty, you know, said, yeah, she looked like somebody I could welcome at my table. And she said it in a different way than that. But they were quite a combination, you know, and I got quite a kick out of them.
Yeah. You give just great examples all throughout. And once again, folks, if you have any questions or comments or have had experience with a nursing home or assisted living facility, you're certainly welcome to join in the discussion. The number is 866-801-8255. Once again, it's 866-801-8255. It's funny, I kind of had a little bit of knowledge from both. My mom moved into an assisted living place and my dad moved into a nursing home, but they were right next to each other so they could still see each other.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had other health issues and couldn't move into the assisted living place. But my mom said, you know, after all the years of working hard and things like that, it was a really fun time for her because she had somebody else doing her laundry and she had a maid that came in once a week. And so, she was thrilled with that and did make new friendships and lots of activities going on a regular basis for people that are there too.
Yeah, and you know, there's a whole profession of activity professionals who are really devoted to this population of elders. And you know, everybody gets in it for their own reasons. You know, I fell into this from singing. I certainly wasn't in a caregiving situation at the time, but everybody has their own stories, and these activity directors are just wonderful people. And you know, they have certifications that they achieve, and so they're very qualified people. And you know, they're about creating a quality of life for the people who are living in these places. And so there's no shortage of things to do. In fact, you know, one of my activity friends, you know, it's really, again, the person and who they are before they came in and probably how they're going to be when they're there. And she categorized residents as, you know, I think no-goes, slow-goes, and go-goes. I don't know. There's three categories. I have them in the book. But basically,
yes,
there's no-goes who, you know, no matter what you do to encourage them to participate, they're not. There's the go-go's who are going to do it every, you know, they're going to participate in everything because that's who they are and what they want to do. And then there's slow-go's, need a little prodding. Yeah, but there's no shortage of things. It's only limited by what you want to do.
Exactly. Tell the story of Esther.
Oh, my. Thank you for giving me that opportunity.
Because that within itself is a very heartwarming story. And I think, if anything else, it reinforces the activities that you do with
mm-hmm.
the elderly.
Yes. Well, you know, Esther was in assisted living in Hickory, North Carolina. And and she became, over the years, my designated heckler. you know, I would sing a song, and I have crazy song segues. You know, in February, instead of just going right to Valentine's Day, I start with, you know, you're single first. So you're either a gigolo or a gigolette. And then you, you know, meet that stranger in the night, and then you can't smile without them. And you send red roses to a blue lady, and you wind up either in love and marriage or with Patsy Cline's Crazy for ever getting into this to begin with. So, you know, she would just have a field day with me about rolling her eyes and all this kind of stuff. And so we became good friends, as you might imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day I needed to go up there and do a performance, and the activity director said, can you come visit Esther in the hospital after you're done? I said, sure. Didn't really think much of it, just to say yes. And then as we're driving over, she said, well, by the way, she's in the coronary care unit, and she actually died and was revived, you know, last week. And I said, and she wants to see me. Why? And so I get there, and Esther's there, and her daughter's there, and I remain in contact with her daughter all these years. And, you know, Esther's flirting with me, and her daughter's all kind of embarrassed and stuff. And I said, Esther, how you doing? And she said, well, you know, I said, what did you want? You know, I'm here. And she said, I want you to sing me a song. And she said, Because He Lives. And it's a beautiful song. Because He Lives, I can face tomorrow. Beautiful song. I said, Esther, here's the problem. I'm a guy from South Philadelphia. I said, you know, we have a picture of the Lord on one wall and Frank Sinatra on the other. And I said, we come downstairs every morning and we bow to Frank. And I said, you know, these are the things that I sing. I sing, you know, I sing pop songs and all kind of stuff. I used to play in rock and roll bands and, you know, all of this. And I said, but you know what? I eventually sang for her Unforgettable, because the moment was unforgettable and she was. But I said, you know, I'm going to go learn that song for you. And I have a little recording studio in my house, and I recorded the song and I put it on a CD and I sent it back, and she was back to the assisted living facility. So in my mind, everything was good. And she kind of even knew who it was from before she even opened it. And it was this one 3.5 minute song, Because He Lives. Well, not too long afterwards, Esther was in hospice, and then Esther passed away. And I don't make it a point necessarily to go to funerals of residents who I've known over the years, though I've had a lot of activity directors call me when a resident passes, particularly if I was close to them. But for some reason, something was pulling me to go to, and I was available to go to Esther's funeral. And, of course, the song they sang there was Because He Lives. But besides that, when I walked in, the daughter came over to me, and up till then, everybody who had observed her said she had not cried at all, you know, until you walked in. And it's like, wow, I couldn't even imagine. So she came over to me and she said, did you hear about my mother's last day of life? And I said, no, not at all. And she said, well, essentially, we played your CD with that 3.5 minute song over and over and over again until the daughter actually knelt down next to her mother and started singing with me to Esther, and then Esther passed on that day. And, you know, for me, it's like, wow, how more powerful can you get when maybe you help somebody transition from this life to whatever awaits us in the next, and shirk the responsibility of doing what I do, either if it's carrying a message forward about educated aging and preparing sooner, or using my talents to bring, you know, joy to elders. You know, you can't run away from it.
Right. Very true. Well, you have you express so much in this book, a lot of laughs and a lot of poignancy both. It is Who Moved My Dentures? It is by Anthony Cirillo. Many thanks to healthcare and aging expert Anthony. His book, again, Who Moved My Dentures? Is available at Amazon and other locations. His website, full of videos and a lot of information, is Anthony Cirillo, and that's CIRILLO.com. AnthonyCirillo.com. Tomorrow we'll talk race with and how it continues to hold so many people back with former homicide detective and now author Rod Demery.